It is a record-shattering cold across Wisconsin as well as beyond the Midwest. We're checking in on this cold snap here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This icy air mass moving through our state, keeping temps in the single digits. The Arctic blast could shatter hundreds of records straight across the country. So what's the weather like in your area this morning? How do the low temps and snowfall compare to years past? Join in 800-642-1234. Chris Stumpf is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service based in Milwaukee. And Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So Wisconsin and other places in the Midwest seeing this record low temperatures for this time in November. What's causing this? What's going on atmospherically?
We had a big Arctic outbreak that came out of Canada down through much of the central United States and is now kind of pushing off to the east. But the low temperatures were felt as far south as southern Texas and the Gulf Coast, and it's now kind of pushing off to the east coast.
What did we see here in Wisconsin?
We bottomed out in the single digits yesterday morning. I think the central kind of southern Madison area got down to about 4 degrees. There was some spots that maybe dipped below zero across northern Wisconsin yesterday morning.
So how do these low temperatures compare to past years? You know, I've read that there are hundreds of records being shattered.
Yes, it's quite a big outbreak. And really the last time for this time of year that temperatures were kind of this widespread was about 1911, was I think the last time there was this kind of big Arctic outbreak for about mid-November.
So these Arctic air blasts from Canada, do we frequently get those throughout winter? Are they pretty common?
Pretty common, yes. This is just kind of more unseasonable for this early in the year.
So let's look at snow here for a moment. Most of Wisconsin saw first snowfall in late October. What kind of snow are we seeing here on the ground around the state?
Right now, we've kind of set a pace for the snowiest start to winter that we've ever had.
Wait, snowiest start to winter we've ever had. Just want to make sure you're on the record for that.
That's correct. At least in terms of the number of days of snow here across at least southern Wisconsin, around 8 or 9 days of snow. And then if you factor in today, it'll be 9 or 10 days of snow. And that's just the most we've seen this early.
So that's a lot of liquid, a lot of water on the ground.
Yes, it is. And I mean, thankfully, it's kind of all come in phases and waves, and it's melted, and it's been able to at least move into the rivers and move downstream.
So, Chris, what should we know about irregular amounts of snowfall? How is that going on?
Well, like I said, it's just really what's causing a lot of this is we've got a big high pressure over the West Coast, and that's allowed for these multiple intrusions of Arctic air masses and really an active pattern across the Midwest, and that's really what's brought all the snow to the area.
We're talking about the cold weather and the snow here in Wisconsin and across the country. Chris Stumpf is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Milwaukee. You can join in. How are you dealing with this week's freezing temperatures? What questions do you have? Has it wreaked havoc on your home or your plans for the outdoors? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Chris, what's it like in terms of predicting snowfall? What are the variables to consider to get the most accurate prediction?
Quite a few factors can wreak havoc on a forecast for snowfall. Temperatures are a big one, but also it really depends on, you know, how much liquid you're actually expecting and kind of where that occurs in the atmosphere. There's a favored region for snow growth and snow development, and if you don't get the kind of right ingredients to fall in line there, you can either bust a forecast or really bust a forecast either way, kind of go on the low side or over forecast and you get lower amounts.
How much does your technology, your computer modeling help you out, or, you know, does some of this not defy computers?
Thankfully, we've had significant improvements recently over at least the last couple of years that have allowed us to get a a really good handle on kind of probabilities of amounts. So it allows us to narrow in on maybe what's the lowest amount we could forecast and what might be what we could expect on the highest end. And that's really allowed us to kind of narrow down into and give people a better idea of what we could expect.
Yeah, and so how has technology changed over the year for meteorologists? Do you think that we have better tools to really understand what our day is going to look like?
Absolutely. The stuff has improved in terms of the resolution of models, the how accurate in terms of time they are. So we have more time steps. So like we get kind of a look at what the atmosphere might be doing every hour versus previously maybe every 6 hours. And then with satellite analysis, we've kind of got a much better handle on what's going on than we did in the past, where we've got a view possibly every 30 seconds compared to maybe every 5 or 15 minutes in the past. So there's been significant improvements over the last couple of years.
So do these cold air masses, like the one we're experiencing now, do they move across our region? Do they settle into a place for a while? How do they move?
At least for this time of year, we're still pretty active. Jet stream's pretty active, so it's pretty progressive. So you'll get just kind of a quick day or two shot of cold air, and then it'll push on out. It's not quite like you'd maybe get in the winter where it might settle and kind of sit for multiple days before it finally kicks out. Here, we're still active enough that it'll be pretty progressive.
What effect do the Great Lakes have on winter temperatures and snowfall in the Midwest?
Sure. So it depends kind of on the time of year. So like right now, the water temp's still decently warm, so locations near the lake might actually be able to stay a little bit warmer compared to locations a little further inland or at least away from the lakes. But like this past couple days, with a cold intrusion that we had, you had some pretty strong winds out of the north, and that really, you've got all that cold air moving over those warm lakes has allowed for some really intense lake effect snow to impact parts of Michigan, Indiana, and northern Wisconsin, and even off to the east into Ohio.
Well, let's take a call now. Kenneth is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Kenneth. What's your question?
Hello. Are we in a polar vortex? And why have we heard only of this polar vortex phenomenon in the last couple of years, rather than 10 years?
Yeah. Kenneth, thanks for the call. Chris, are we anywhere near a polar vortex again?
You could technically call it that. You do have these big outbreaks of Arctic air. Could be kind of labeled as the polar vortex coming down into the area. In terms of that term, we've had it around for quite a while, and I think it's just been put into kind of everybody's minds recently. Just everybody's picked up on it as a way to kind of name it and kind of relate it. And at least make people aware of what's coming.
Very quickly, are we headed for a warming trend in the next few days?
It does look like we are. As we head into the weekend, it does look like we'll start to see a moderate in temperatures where we get back into the 40s. We'll still be below normal, but it does look like it'll be getting warmer.
Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
Chris Stumpf is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service based in Milwaukee. Coming up, this is the season where there are the most deer and car collisions. We'll explore a program in Trempealeau County that's using roadside deer as part of food assistance efforts. You can join in. Have you donated venison to a food pantry before? What was that process like? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with the Trempealeau County Sheriff here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The majority of deer vehicle collisions occur during this time of year when deer are most active during the breeding phase. Last year, it was November 11th that saw the highest number of deer crashes in the state. And over the past several years, the total number of crashes each year has remained steady at about 20,000. This analysis comes from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. Trempealeau County developed a program to make use of the venison from some of these winter crashes. Have you benefited from the county's Helping the Hungry program? Have you donated a deer to the program? Are you a hunter? Have you ever donated venison to a local food pantry? We're at 800-642-1234. Brett Semmingson is the sheriff of Trempealeau County. Sheriff Semmingson, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you for having me here today.
So how often do you see deer versus car crashes in Trempealeau County this time of year?
Well, annually we have approximately 800 crashes in the county, of which about 400 are car-deer crashes. A normal month is right around 25 on average, but in the month of October here, we are up over 50 to about 75 deer crashes for the month of October.
How is November looking?
Well, November will be very similar. You know, with the breeding season starting in late October and going into the middle of November, you know, both months are pretty equal as far as the car deer crashes.
So when a driver hits a deer, what do you recommend they do next?
Well, if the damage results in $1,000, if the crash results in $1,000 or more in damage to a vehicle, you must report it to police. A lot of agencies are going away from the face-to-face meeting with a police officer, and we are referring to they're referring the drivers to an online reporting system at the Department of Transportation webpage. Matter of fact, that is the only way you can report deer crashes to the DOT at this time. So if you hit a deer and there's over $1,000 damage, or if you're not sure, you must report it to police and then get an estimate for damage for reporting purposes.
If that deer is on the road, would you call 911?
Yep, that would be a reason to call 911. It's a valid emergency. Any objects laying in the road, of course, can be a danger to other drivers. But if you strike a deer and your car is disabled or the deer is laying in the road like that, that would be a good reason to call 911.
And so if a deer is hit by a driver in Trempealeau County, the deer can be donated to your program called Helping the Hungry. How does that program work?
Well, that was developed here a couple of years ago, actually, by our dispatch sergeant at that time. So throughout the year, not so much in the summer, but people can call in and be put on a list. And when a person hits a deer with their vehicle, they have first chance at it, but they don't always want it. And in that case, the deer usually just lays on the side of the road and either rots away or waits for a deer pickup to come and get it. Well, this time of year when it's cooler, the meat will last a little longer. So if you are on this list, the dispatcher will call the person who's closest to where the crash is to see if they would like the deer. And they can come and get the deer. The registration of it is just a phone call to the Department of Natural Resources, and they take the deer home with them.
We're discussing a program donating venison to families in need of food assistance. Brett Semmingson is sheriff of Trempealeau County. Have you ever donated venison before? Did you hit the deer with your car? What questions do you have about deer car crashes? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sheriff, how long after the deer is killed does it get distributed to families? What is that process like?
Well, like I said, this time of year, it lasts a little longer. So typically, if a car hits a deer and we get a call right away, you know, if it could take up to an hour for somebody to swing by the crash scene and pick it up, that's probably a typical response time, an hour or less. When it gets into the later, spring, summer, and early fall, Then if the person isn't like right on the scene, we are a little bit more careful. You know, we don't judge food quality and we got to be careful that time of year. But this time of year, up to an hour response time is not unusual.
Well, let's bring in Chris now, joining us from Columbia County. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Sheriff. Thank you very much for that program. I've benefited from a similar program in Columbia County, and want to say thank you to the Columbia County Sheriff for that, too.
And, Chris, were you put on a list? How did you get into your program in Columbia County?
Yes, I happened upon an accident that the driver did not want the deer, and then the deputy took my name and number, and then I've been on the list since then.
And so what do you do with the venison? How do you cook it?
Well, I process it.
And you process?
I take the tenderloins out right away and saute them with butter and onions.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for the call. Sheriff Semmingson, it sounds as if, you know, families really appreciate this. How do families, how do they become eligible for the program in Trumbull County?
Well, annually we do a publication on Facebook and on our webpage, just reminding everybody that we have the program. And all they have to do is call our dispatch center to get put on the list. A name and a phone number is all we need. And if you happen to be lucky enough to be in the area of where a crash occurs, you will get a call. It's typically done by whoever's closest, just to reduce the response time. But it's very easy to sign up for it, and the list is maintained until probably early spring. And then when we stop calling again, you know, then that list is just thrown away, and we'll start a new list next fall again.
Well, let's bring in Jake now, joining us from Brookfield. Hi, Jake.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
So I'm wondering, do the families in need also get connected with resources, maybe just another person in the area who knows how to properly butcher and process the deer?
Well, we don't, you know, we don't have anyone in mind that we would send them to. If they would ask that question, you know, obviously we know who the local processors are. We don't have any agreements with them or anything like that. But we certainly would give them the options, and then they could pick from the list that we give them.
Jake, thanks so much for the call. Madeline joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Madeline.
Hi. Well, it seems like all over the state there are a few deer that are carrying chronic wasting disease that destroys the brain. And who takes the responsibility to make sure that those deer are tested for chronic wasting disease?
Madeline, thanks for the call. Sheriff Semmingson, how do you deal with CWD issue?
Well, the CWD issue would be handled through the DNR. We don't, you know, we don't do any testing for it. We would put them in touch with a DNR representative to make the arrangements to have the deer tested if they wanted to do that. They are always interested in testing deer, and you know, I've seen some news stories going around where there was some talk about making it mandatory. So I know that they would be interested in testing, and it'd probably be just a phone call to the DNR. However, we don't do the testing. We may help them get that done, but we don't do it ourselves.
Your Helping the Hungry program has been in place since 2015. What have you learned as a county since you started this program?
Well, we give away. We have about 50 deer a year that are donated through this program, and we have many more on the list who probably don't get a call. So there's a need out there for sure. And I know that the donation, the hunters who donate their deer are, you know, there's a lot of that going on around here as well. So to me, that tells me that there's actually a need for the venison. So and it's one way that we can also keep our roads a little bit cleaner as well. It's doing good for that, but it's helping those who are in need, and I think we have that problem around here that there's enough people that really depend on this.
This time of year, how much of the work of your responders is to tend to these deer car crashes?
Well, it's a little less now. Like I said, we used to respond to all of them, and we would write up the crash, and it would be an hour to 2 hours minimum per deer crash. But now when they call it in, it's simply a phone call to dispatch. If the vehicle is disabled or somebody's injured, an officer will respond. But otherwise, the dispatcher will just take the information over the phone and direct the person to, you know, if they want the deer, to take the deer and how to register it. And they're led on their way. And if they do not want the deer, then we'll start calling the list. And really isn't, you know, unless the officer has to respond, it's not a lot of time involved in it anymore.
What have you heard from the families? What has been the response been from families that received the deer?
Honestly, I have not had any feedback on that. I don't know an answer to that question.
So you're just specifically trying to get these deer off the road and available when it's possible that they can be available.
Absolutely. You know, when a deer is hit, obviously there's probably a portion of it that the injuries are so severe that, you know, you really can't eat that. But there's a lot of deer that could be used for feeding people that simply go to waste if we don't do this. They lay on the road and they rot away, or the deer people come and get them and haul them off. But it's a way to make use of a resource we have that, you know, that I think benefits a number of people. So,
well, Sheriff Simingson, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for calling. It's been nice talking to you.
Brett Simingson is Trempealeau County Sheriff. We've been talking about its program to use roadside deer as part of food assistance. Coming up, we have Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett joining us. Do you support the mayor's budget? What priorities would you like the mayor's office to focus on? We're at 800-642-1234. News update next on the Ideas Network. You're with us in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The first public hearings of the House impeachment inquiry into President Trump begin in about an hour and 25 minutes from now. You can hear live coverage on WPR. We'll bring it to you on our NPR News and Classical Music Network. It starts at 9. It's live coverage of the public impeachment inquiry hearings at 9 on the NPR News and Classical Music Network and online at WPR.org. Right now, you have a line to Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. We have a number of issues that we want to discuss. Here are a few: his latest budget proposal, how the city is getting ready to host the Democratic National Convention, and the streetcar at the one-year mark. So what questions do you have for the Milwaukee mayor? What key issues should the city be focused on fixing right now? Join in, 800-642-1234. Tom Barrett is Milwaukee's 40th mayor. He's been at the helm since 2004. He was formerly a member of the Wisconsin State Assembly and Senate. He served 5 terms in Congress, and he joins us from our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Mayor Barrett, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's always great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're inching closer to 2020, the presidential election, and the DNC, the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee. Is your city prepared?
We are certainly going to be prepared, and we are getting ready right now. Imagine having 4 of the biggest weddings that you can imagine on 4 consecutive days and preparing for that. But this is the first time in the history of the state of Wisconsin, so obviously the first time in the history of this city, Milwaukee, where we are hosting a major political party convention. So it is a huge undertaking, and we've been working very closely with the Secret Service. We've been working with the host committee. We've been working with the national committee and many, many vendors here in Wisconsin to get ready for it. But it's very, very exciting.
Well, January 7th, you have the first onslaught of the walkthrough of the facilities, an onslaught of journalists and tech people coming to check out what the facilities look like. Are they ready?
Oh, yeah, they are absolutely ready. And part of what helped us get this was Pfizer Forum. When we had the initial tour for the group that made the selection as to have the convention in Milwaukee, that tour occurred less than 48 hours after the ribbon cutting for the Pfizer Forum. So it was brand spanking new. There had never been an event in it. And it's a state-of-the-art facility. So in a lot of different cities, when you have an event like this, you have to do some retrofitting and you have to bring in the newest in fiber optics and things like that. We have the newest in fiber optics and all of the communication apparatus that's necessary for a convention. And it doesn't have to be retrofitted. It's there now. And I think that was very appealing to them.
Shifting to lead, you've made it a priority to monitor lead levels in vulnerable newborns. How much does this help lower risks for lead exposure in children in Milwaukee?
Well, we have made considerable progress, and we have more progress that we need to make, but we have made considerable progress in lowering the elevated lead levels in children that we have tested. And we just had a meeting on this yesterday. I was very, very pleased with the progress we're making. We want to go even farther, though. We want to make sure that there are no kids in this community who are exposed to lead. We don't want to see any elevated blood levels, and that's our goal. And the focus is on making sure that we get rid of the lead paint in homes. We know that that is the number one thing that we can do. Over time, we obviously want to replace our infrastructure, our lead laterals, but we are making progress, and we want to just continue that. It's certainly a long-term project, but our budget contains a lot of money to deal with this issue, and we're going to continue to make it a priority.
So at your meeting yesterday, where do you see the progress happening? I mean, what specifically is going on that you say, aha, that is the turnaround right there?
Well, I think it's not an aha moment where it occurred overnight. This has been something that we have been working on, and what we're doing, again, as you pointed out, we are testing our small kids for lead, and we are seeing smaller numbers of kids with the elevated blood levels. I think that means that our strategy, which has been to remediate these homes, to get rid of the lead-based paint in these homes, that strategy is working. It's a long-term strategy. It takes a lot of work because these homes were all not built in 1 year, and you can't remediate them all in 1 year. But it's a commitment that I've made, and it's something that we are really putting a lot of resources into achieving this goal.
Let's look at a news item, the acid attack. The Hispanic man reported being attacked in Milwaukee with acid on November 1st. And you said that type of racial verbal attack is condoned at the highest levels of government. The White House said it was disgusting that you had pointed a finger at President Trump. What is your response there, your reaction?
My response is that he and all leaders, we got to bring down the temperature. We got to bring down the temperature, and we can't have this division in this country. I'm trying to avoid divisions in our country, not to create them. And so what I would ask all political leaders is you just can't paint with this broad brush for everybody. You just can't do that. And I don't think it's productive. I think it might be politically effective for some people, or at least they perceive it to be. But I don't think that's who we are as a people. And so my underlying message was, let's lower the temperature. Let's not have these types of verbal attacks that occur because people listen to them.
What can government leaders do to decrease hate crimes then? Where can we move the needle?
I think we can lead. And I can tell you that I see people from all backgrounds. This city is very multiracial. It's multicultural. And there's good people. There's good people everywhere. And I think if you start with a notion, let's look for the good in people rather than let's try to look for ways to divide us, I think that we're all on this planet together. So let's learn how to get along with each other.
We're catching up with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett discussing a range of issues. You can join in with what's on your mind. What do you think of the city's streetcar? Are you concerned about reckless driving in Milwaukee? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mayor Barrett, let's look at the streetcar for a moment called The Hop. Just celebrated 1 year anniversary. And when it was created, there was always expansion that was on the books. And the lakefront line is on hold because of this apartment tower downtown. It hasn't broken ground yet. Do you think the city should move to a plan B here?
Well, I feel very, very good about the first year of the Hop, because what we had in the first year is we had over 800,000 people who wrote it. No matter how people felt about it initially, there's no question when you have 800,000 riders in the first year that people like this. And a lot of this was due, of course, to the Potawatomi. And we're very thankful to the Potawatomi for stepping forward and sponsoring this. But we're very, very confident that the line that will go to the lakefront will be completed. That's something that is basically already, the tracks have literally been laid for that. So that's going to happen. That's for sure. We want to expand it even farther than that. I want to expand it north into the African-American neighborhoods. I want to expand it south into the Hispanic neighborhoods. I want it to serve the entire city of Milwaukee. And I know that this is going to take a lot of work, but I remain committed because people have benefited from it, and I think that's a good thing. It's not going to be the type of thing you're going to have throughout the state of Wisconsin or rural areas or sparsely populated suburban areas, but where you have a lot of density and a lot of people, people are riding it, and that's a good thing.
Let's take a look at reckless driving with Erica in Milwaukee, leading us off with a question. Hi, Erica.
Hi. So I live in Milwaukee. I drive from the north to the south side every day and back in the evening. Every day, I see at least three people run red lights, and there's right-hand drivers that just come up and swoop over. They come from the left all the way over to the right, and now we've got some children who've been, you know, killed or, you know, harmed. I just think there's got to be some creative solutions, because it's almost more scary to me than the shooting, and I live on the north side and appreciate the city, love the city, but something has got to, there's got to be some creative solutions from our leadership, and I'm wondering what's in the hopper, what's happening?
Mayor Barrett.
There's two different things here. I think there's a short-term concern and there's a long-term concern. And the short-term concern, obviously, is that we have to apprehend the people who do this. There is legislation that would allow us to have some cameras. We think that that is part of the problem is making sure that we can identify people and apprehend them quickly, because you can't have a police officer on every street, although obviously we want to have our police being proactive in making sure they're doing what they can to deter and end reckless driving. But over the long run, I also think we have an issue here, because I look at the ages of people who are involved in this, and oftentimes they're late teens, early 20s. And it's how do you get through to them that this is not a video game? And I do wonder whether having young people grow up on these video games and whatever it is they're doing, they can do it and no one gets hurt. I've seen the scenes. I've been to the places. I've been to the funerals. This is a serious problem. So I agree with Erica. This is a serious problem. And we're working with police. I want to work with the schools. I think the schools can play a role with this. If you look at what we've done with the reduction in fire fatalities, it's because we've been able to get to kids at a young age. Maybe that's what we need to do. And again, we're trying to figure out in real time, all right, what's the most effective way to have this happen? Because, again, I drive the same streets that Erica does, and I've seen the reckless driving as well, and it's very, very disconcerting.
You've asked Governor Evers for state aid to fight reckless driving. Are you hopeful Milwaukee will get it?
Well, we need additional help from the state. We need a stronger partnership with the state, no question about it. And Governor Evers has been very responsive to us. We're also trying to work with the state legislators to let them know how much we are in need of additional resources for our police department. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to create a bridge that will allow us to get those resources, because that's something that we need right here. Right now, the budget for the Milwaukee Police Department is larger than the entire property tax levy for the city of Milwaukee. And I'm betting that's not occurring in any of the places that are listening to this show other than Milwaukee right now.
We're talking through a number of issues on the table with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. You can join in 800-642-1234. What questions are on your mind about quality of life in Milwaukee, and what city issues radiate out to the rest of Wisconsin? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back for more conversation in just a moment with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We're exploring a number of different issues that impact the city and then that ripple out to the rest of Wisconsin. Will the Democratic National Convention bring you to Milwaukee in July? Upwards of 20,000 members of the media will cover the convention, and that first walkthrough of convention facilities is set for early January. Do you live in the city? What issues are on your mind that you want the mayor's office to address? Join in 800-642-1234. And Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett stays with us to the top of the hour from our studios in Milwaukee. Let's go back to the phones now with Patricia joining us from the south side of Milwaukee. Hi, Patricia. What is your question?
Good morning. Mayor Barrett, I spoke with you at Connect with the Homeless at Marquette, and I'm wondering why we don't have more warming stations open right now, even though we've had this cold, cold weather so much earlier than usual. And secondly, what efforts are being made in order to permanently house more of our homeless people, not just the people under the bridge? Thank you.
Well, let me start with the second one first, because I just made an announcement earlier this week, which was a very exciting announcement. And I have to give a lot of credit to Racine, because Racine was the one that led the charge on this. We announced earlier this week that we are going to have tiny homes. This is a new project on the northern part of the city, where we're going to have between 40 and 48 homes that are 240 square feet for homeless veterans primarily. And what this is going to do is it's going to allow both men and women to have their own home. In the middle, there will be a 10,000 square foot community center, which will have showers, will have kitchen facilities, will have services for the veterans who are living there. So that's something that's important to us. And I think that that's really, really a solid step forward. Also earlier this week, we announced that the warming centers are opening early, and I think that that's a big plus as well. So the the community services on State Street opened its overnight warming shelter last year in December. They're opening now. The Abdullah Family Warming Center on 30th Street has opened. Repairs of the Breach is serving people. So all three organizations are looking for volunteers and donations now. But fortunately, they responded when we reached out to them, and this is something that they would be doing anyway. When I say reached out to them, they recognized the problem. So hopefully, and the weather forecasts are, it's going to get a little warmer. But December 1st is when we anticipate they will open for the winter. So this is something that's on our front burner. It's something that we know is an issue, that there are people who don't have a safe place and a warm place to stay. So we're committed to working with these organizations that provide these beds.
Patricia, thanks. Let's now go to Christine, who's joining us from Eau Claire this morning. Hi, Christine.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I appreciate it. Good morning. I'm very concerned about the persistent achievement gap that's the worst in the nation. And it seems like it gets announced every year, but there doesn't seem to be any concern and real address, I don't know what's being done, but the achievement gap gets announced every year. It's the worst in the nation, and I'd like to know what's actually being done about it, because if the Bucks need a new stadium, by God, they get one. But if a third grader can't read, well, I don't know. So I'd like an answer.
Christine, thanks. Yeah.
And I think that that's a very good question. There's an organization here called Milwaukee Succeeds, which brings together representatives from the public schools, from the choice schools, from the charter schools, and has community leaders that try to focus on all of the kids. And we just went through an evaluation of what we have done. And like you, there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of frustration because this is a problem that has persisted. And the focus is moving more and more towards putting the resources into early education, that you have to get to the kids even before they get to kindergarten so that they can have that exposure. Just the number of words that kids are exposed to between birth and 3 years old is an important indicator on how well they're going to do. So it's to try to get kids exposed to a lot more of this at an early age. And it's going to take a partnership. It's going to take a partnership with the state. It's going to take a partnership with the philanthropic community. But clearly, it's an issue, and clearly, it's an issue that we have to do a better job on.
You proposed in your 2020 budget that would reduce the number of Milwaukee police officers by 60. Why do you support that change?
Well, that was a fiscal decision, not a philosophical decision, and that's an important distinction. If I had the resources, I would have not done that. But this goes back to a statement I made earlier in the show, that the budget for the Milwaukee Police Department, which went up by millions of dollars this year, is actually larger than the entire property tax levy for the city of Milwaukee. And that is not a sustainable business model. The problem we have here, and this affects many communities in the state of Wisconsin, not just Milwaukee, but we are in handcuffs. The state does not give us the flexibility that we want so that we can have revenues that allow us to deal with issues like public safety, like early education, like lead remediation, like replacing aging streets. We need to be able to move away from relying so much on property taxes and so much on state aid, which has been stagnant or falling literally for decades. What I have said is if the state gives me the ability to go to our voters and have a sales tax, I will put another class into the police academy next year, which would avoid reducing the number of police, reduce the 60 police. I don't want to see that happen, and I'm looking for a way to make sure it doesn't happen.
So Milwaukee County leaders as well as state lawmakers are proposing this local sales tax option for Milwaukee. And you say if that happens, you would put it toward law enforcement, those dollars.
I can be even more specific. I would put some towards law enforcement so we don't have that cut. I would put some in the fire department. I would put some towards property tax relief. I would put some towards lead remediation. And we'd put some towards making sure that we're replacing more streets. In addition, we want to make sure that it's in putting money in towards law enforcement, we also have other measures that are not reliant on the police, but will allow us to have more of a public health approach to reducing crime as well.
Brian from Port Washington called in, couldn't stay with us. Brian wanted to know if Milwaukee might join other cities and become a sanctuary city protecting undocumented immigrants from deportation or prosecution.
My view on this is that I want our police to make sure that we are dealing with the problems that we have as a city. That means if a person has a burned out headlight, I don't want our Milwaukee police to use their resources to have that person deported. Now, if someone's a felon, that's a different story. But we simply do not feel it is appropriate for our police that need to work with our residents and need to build trust with our residents to do the work that the federal government has jurisdiction over. The federal government is going to do what the federal government is going to do. I want to make sure that we're keeping our streets safe and that we're building a community bond between our residents and our police. And that does not occur if our local police have to be an arm of the federal government in terms of immigration.
Very quickly, Jeremy in Racine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. If the current budget does not allow to have, or you have to reduce your officers 60 by 60, how do you have money to expand your rail, like rail in Milwaukee, but don't have money for your law enforcement, which is more needed than the light rail at this particular moment?
And the answer is that we do not use property tax dollars for the hop. We do use property tax dollars for the police department. And so there in this current budget that I have, there are no dollars, no property tax dollars that go towards the hop at all. So that should answer your question. I agree that the property tax dollars should go towards should go towards making the city safer.
Mayor Barrett, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to join you.
That was Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who joined us from Wisconsin Public Radio Studios in Milwaukee. Just ahead, an hour-long conversation about immigration. We hear from an organizer about the conditions of migrant families at our country's southern border with Mexico. And then a historian joins us to explore the influence of immigrants on Wisconsin's culture today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.